You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with director Tom Moore. Nominated for Best Animated Film at the Oscars this year, Wolfwalkers is a stunning tale of two young girls who attempt to bring peace between the beasts of the forest and the monsters of the city. In this one-on-one, we speak to director Tom Moore about the joys of hand-drawn animation, the divisiveness of false faith, and why we're so afraid of the wild. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
I'm happy to. Yeah, it's nice to chat to people. Meeting people on Zoom all year, it's been nice. I sort of also realize this is probably coming to the end of the interview, so you're one of the last interviews I've probably been doing.
Well, no pressure there. I mean,
It's funny. I was just looking at your site there before I came on. It was interesting you had the thing about the reuniting America. There was an article about reuniting America. I think it was a book or something.
We have a guy that he does his own podcast, and they so I'll be honest, I haven't heard that.
I didn't listen to it either. I was looking at it, but why I found it interesting is that it's kind of one of the themes I've been talking about a lot is the theme in the movie Wolfwalkers that we had about the sort of the little English girl and the little Irish girl, which is still like a division. And again, it just got hot again. Like there was loads of protests and stuff after Brexit.
Yes.
And I'm from the north of Ireland originally. So it has been kind of sad to see America kind of split apart like that, because it's quite like, it reminds me of Northern Ireland sometimes, that people have a lot more in common than they have different to each other. But the differences are what they're defining themselves by. And it's kind of sad. It's important, too, that people do speak to their own truth. And those small differences can be important, too. And definitely it seems irreconcilable that some people want to be British, even though they're on the island of Ireland. But it was just a theme that was running through the movie, and I've been speaking about a lot in interviews, so I just noticed it on the website. Because it's kind of a weird, I don't want to say morbid, but like a little bit of a fascination, because I grew up idealizing America through American media, and I definitely saw it as much more progressive and evolved and moving forward than Ireland, that seemed a bit stuck in the past. But lately I've been seeing that America has deep divisions going back a long way that are coming out all the time, and it's quite interesting to see. Well, I suppose it's the reality, rather than, I was only going off comic books and TV shows, which I think was pretty childish to imagine was the real America, you know.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that even though we're the site is localized in the US, like I'm actually in Toronto.
Ah, okay.
So it's been really interesting to chat with the rest of us on the site, because I mean, you're right, the last few years it's like a band-aid has been ripped off.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, I have family in Toronto and around that area and stuff, and they've been saying that too, that they're sort of looking across the border a bit aghast, going, what the heck.
Yeah.
How interesting. Also, you're up in Toronto. How interesting. What's
yeah.
out there?
Pardon?
Is it okay there now, the weather? Because we've just got, summer seems to have decided to start this week in Ireland.
Oh, the weather is lovely. The weather is
fine.
Yeah,
you're not in snow or anything anymore, no.
Actually, I can't say that we just had snow this week, but I think
really?
That's the last one.
Might be the last of it.
I think it's the last one. Yeah, I mean, with everything else going on, it's madness. But the weather's been nice, so.
Yeah.
Honestly, the Wolfwalkers is just gorgeous. It is absolutely a stunning film from start to finish. I was wondering, like, we've already talked a little bit about the idea of division in that, but where was the idea of the film rooted into?
That was something that we wanted to speak about, and Ross and I grew up here in Kilkenny. And when we came up with the idea, I remember talking to him about the fact that there had been this folklore in Kilkenny about people that could transform into wolves, but they were like positive stories. It wasn't like monsters.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how Ireland had been identified as Wolfland prior to that, and part of what had happened was that when Oliver Cromwell came over to colonize, he kind of wiped out the wolves in order to show that he could tame the country in a way that the king couldn't. And so by wiping out the wolves in Ireland, he kind of changed something about how we even see ourselves. And a lot of the division that still exists today goes back to that time period when there was this like very strong difference between the English and the Irish and the Catholics and the Protestants and everything like that. So those are like the big themes that Ross and I talked about. But then like the thing that really hooked us in, because we were talking about a few different ideas, and the thing that really hooked us in, I think, was the idea of this little girl. It was actually originally going to be a little boy, but a little kid who wants to be a hunter like their dad, but ends up making friends with a little Irish kid who turns out to be one of the wolves that they're hunting. So the idea of like a hunter having to change their whole point of view, their whole worldview, by becoming one of the prey they're hunting, just seemed like it had a lot of natural built-in conflict. So that was really the core of the story right from the beginning.
Yeah, I love the aspect of perspective. And I should say, too, since you just mentioned it about the monsters, it's funny, my son, I was watching it to prep for the interview.
Right.
And my son came in at the end, and I was sort of explaining. I said, well, they turn into wolves, but that's a good thing. So they're like werewolves? Yeah. I'm like, well, they're not werewolves.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, that's cute. Yeah, I know I have a little 3-year-old granddaughter, and she loves, like, she watched it, and I was a bit afraid. She was too young, thought she'd be afraid, but she loved it, and she's taken on Maeve as her alter ego. She, whenever she doesn't want to put on her shoes, she's like, I'm a wolf walker. I don't have to do anything civilized, you know.
I love that you brought that up, because one of the key things in this film is this idea of wild versus quote unquote civilized.
Yeah.
And I was wondering why you think we draw such a firm dichotomy between those two things.
We didn't used to. Like, that's what I've been more and more interested in. Just working on the movie has led me, like, it's always like this. It led me into research. I kind of want to go deeper into it. I've been reading a lot about like the worldview of like Native American people or Australian Aborigines and stuff. And they lived in the world much more as another species rather than as the species that was in control or, you know, have overpower over all the other species and stuff. And so the idea of wildness wasn't a bad thing. You know, like the idea of how you naturally functioned in the world as part of the ecosystem was just part of the way of things, you know. And especially the Native Americans, they weren't separate to nature. They were kind of managing nature without feeling that they could completely dominate it, you know. So I was just reading the other day about how, you know, they wouldn't, like, they knew how to balance the buffalo rather than like wiping them out. And things, that kind of balance, I think, is interesting, because our idea of civilization seems to be like concreting over a forest rather than some way that we could live alongside the forest and not lose everything it has to give us, and at the same time have our own society that isn't kind of separate from it. So I think we need to rediscover that. I think that's what everyone's aching for. I think in the lockdown during the pandemic, a lot of people rediscovered nature. And I think whenever we, you know, people are frightened for climate change and frightened for all these things that are coming down the pike, I think it's going to be a bit of a spiritual awakening too, to like remember that we're, nature isn't something separate to us, that we're actually part of. So, yeah.
Why do you think we're so afraid of that? Because that just runs through every character in this film, and this idea of being afraid.
I think a lot of manipulative rulers have ruled through fear, and they've used fear against us. And I think there's like a we're very social creatures, you know, and so we don't want to be we fear that. I guess in our earliest times, if you were excluded from the tribe, that meant death. You know, we relied on each other to survive. So it's kind of hardwired into us that if we step out of line or we're not quite part of, you know, society, that it's almost like mortally dangerous. And then that fear can be manipulated by people that are like, even someone like Oliver Cromwell wasn't really a grifter. Like, I don't think he was a Trump character, but he was a true believer. But his version of Christianity was so kind of twisted that it meant that he was on a mission, he believed, to kind of tame the Irish rather than sort of see them as, you know, fellow travelers or whatever. So yeah, why are we motivated by that? I don't know. Why is that fear kind of at the root of everything? It is a hard question, isn't it? But we are. We're all afraid of being the outsider. We're all afraid of being the one that left outside, and we're susceptible to that, I think, all the time.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you talk about the Cromwell, but the character isn't Cromwell, it's rooted in Cromwell. No.
Yeah, it's just inspired by him.
But even you know, like you talked about his version of Christianity there, and it's like it's terrifying. It's eliminating all the competition.
I don't think it's very Christian, ironically. I find that is, you see that all through history, but I was talking to Simon McBurney, who did the voice of Lord Protector, and I mean, he's an English guy and all, and we were talking about how Cromwell has a there's a statue to Cromwell outside the House of Parliament in England, and like he's a hero there, and Simon was saying that he actually was quite terrifying in that he was a true believer, but he was so hard on people and so pure in his Puritan beliefs that he tried to cancel Christmas, and he tried, you know what I mean? He was just, yeah, he cancelled Christmas, and it was his downfall in the end. He was like, he'd kind of come up with a version of Christianity that was almost like Taliban-like interpretation of Islam or something, you know? It was so harsh, he banned the music and everything. And so he really, I think he really believed it on earnestly, but it was pretty dark, his vision of the best way to worship, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, one of the things too in this film that I loved is this idea of perspective. And I was wondering, you could talk a little bit about how perspective shapes our understanding and why that's so important to know.
Yeah. You mean the perspective as in someone else's point of view?
Yes. Or, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that idea of being able to, in a lot of mythology, there's a lot of transformation, and the root of the Wolfwalkers story is that St. Patrick kind of put this blessing or a curse on the people who wouldn't come to his sermons, and they howled in the woods, you know, and he made them wolves. And I think he put them in this position that they were between the animals and the humans, you know, and they kind of strode between both worlds. So I think that's really interesting, because it was an idea of seeing the world from the point of view of another species. They had both perspectives, so they were kind of more imbalanced than everybody else, you know. But yeah, I don't know, if you could walk, you know, the old sayings like walk a mile in your enemy's shoes or whatever. And that can be really, really hard sometimes. I mean, I'm not always great at it myself, but I think it's something interesting to talk to kids about. The idea that everyone's kind of the hero in their own story. So somebody who seems to be your enemy or very other, probably, you know, if you could see things from their point of view, there's some hope for reconciliation there or something.
Yeah, it's interesting because the biting of the wolf bite in this film is almost a heroic act. Yeah. It's almost salvific. It's like, no, let me show you. Is really,
yeah, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, forgive me for the stupidity of this question, but I have to know, actually hand drawn or made to look like it?
Oh, really hand drawn? Oh, yeah, it's really hand drawn. Yeah, yeah, and And I always find it interesting, because I suppose for the people are getting confused now, because we've had stuff like Spider-Verse and all that did a pretty good job of creating the look of drawn stuff with computers. No, we do it all by hand, and the backgrounds are painted with watercolors, and the lines are done with like pens and markers. A lot of the character animation we draw directly on the screen, but it's still frame by frame animation drawn. And a lot of it's on paper. Like every time you see the world through the eyes of a wolf, like the wolf vision scenes when Robin transforms, that's all paper and pencil animation. So,
you know, it's funny because you're right. Like the lines have blurred so much that I'm reading the press notes and I'm like, okay, it says it, but how much? Like, I remember those days when the transition happened the other way, like Aladdin and all that. It was like, oh, they put some computer in here. Oh,
and that was a big deal. Yeah,
is right. Because it's gorgeous. Like, it is just gorgeous. I was wondering, like, is there anything that you think the hand-drawn provides that we may have lost with the domination of CGI?
It's a bit like some of the themes of the movie, too. That it's sort of a tradition that held a lot of expressiveness that we let go of when we went to CG. And I think CG is an amazing tool, and there's been amazing movies made with it, but you're fighting against it all the time. It wants to be kind of perfect, where hand-drawn has a sort of an expressiveness, or just the natural little mistakes that happen no matter how hard you try with the artist's hand, you know? So Yeah, I think there's something timeless about it too. It doesn't date in the same way because I think CG gets better all the time. So I guess hand-drawn kind of has a more timeless feel to it. It's just how I prefer. I got into animation to spend my days drawing. You know, I enjoy drawing. So I just prefer to work that way.
Yeah, it really works well. And I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about the style because it's so unique. Like, what sort of influences were you looking for to create this world?
We looked at art from the time period. We looked at, like, woodblock prints from the time period. We looked at, everything. And also contemporary stuff as well. Like, we looked at a Japanese movie called The Tale of Princess Kaguya from Studio Ghibli.
Yep.
And comic books, of course, and illustrators and people that were working in kind of fairy tale picture books. And some of them did concept art for us, like Cyril Pedrosa. So took a lot of influence from different places. But in the end, the idea was that everything to do with the English and their worldview and the town was going to be woodblock prints and quite geometric. Everything to do with the forest was going to be more kind of free-flowing and watercolors and like almost unfinished, just lots of potential rather than closed off, you know.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned looking at the art of the time. I was wondering, and of course you mentioned Cromwell. What's that process like of using history to your advantage but not being bound by it? Is that a challenge or freeing?
When you kind of go on a shopping trip, you're kind of picking the bits that help tell your story, and it's like you definitely use your artistic license a lot too. There was a moment when we realized we couldn't call him Cromwell. Like, we were fascinated at the start to kind of represent it, but then we realized, no, this is big, broad strokes. He's just represents a worldview that was prevalent at the time, that kind of colonial worldview where it was kind of, we'll civilize you by hook or by crook and you'll like it, you know, that kind of way, because it would be terrible to leave you in a state of savagery, you know. And I mean, Ireland was seen as a trial run for America and a lot of countries, you know, that attitude. But you don't want to be too didactic or too precise. We didn't want to wander into that Quentin Tarantino realm where it feels a little bit edgy, the ambivalence between historical figures and everything like that. So yeah, it is a bit of a, you think about it all the time, but it's a lovely starting point because there's so much reference, there's so much to go on, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask too, as we start to wrap up here, one of the quotes that I have from you and your team is you quoted Chuck Jones in your development of the story, and you talk about story being king, but you were trying to devise a film that is intelligent enough for children but simple enough for adults.
I always loved that quote. Did they put that in the press notes?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I love that. So I'd never heard that before.
I must look up where I got it because I've been saying it for years. I love it. I think it was in one of his books. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? You know, kids are very discerning and they're not at all, what's the word? They'll tell you it straight. They'll give it to you straight. They won't flatter you, you know. So, I mean, we make the movies with the first primary audience of kids, but you're definitely keeping in mind that oftentimes kids hook into a movie and watch it again and again. And definitely adults have to be able to come along on the journey too, you know, so.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful, honestly. And I'm got my fingers crossed for you this weekend. Hopeful.
Who knows? Yeah. I think I know, but anyway. I enjoy it anyway. You know, it's amazing.
Absolutely. And I am pulling for you.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
It would be amazing. And it's meant a lot to me that like a lot of kind of outlets and stuff have said, oh, you know, Soul will win, but Wolfwalkers should win. That's amazing. I mean, that's a win in itself, just that it's been seen in that light and that so many people have said they enjoyed it. And, you know, Monday morning, the movie will still be there. The competition will be over, but the movies will be there and hopefully kids will continue to discover it.
Well, absolutely. And I agree with that. I think there's something so incredible about the storytelling in this particular film that it would be well deserving of an Oscar win. But if it doesn't win, that does not take away from any of that.
That's what I feel. Yeah, that's what I feel like. And we're being considered among some of the best studios out there. And also for me, it feels pretty good that we got this far. I'm glad we got into the last five anyway. So. But yeah, anyway, thanks, Steve.
I'm pulling for you. So
thanks, man.
Thanks so much, Tom. I really appreciate it. It's lovely.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.